Welcome to the Jennings Wire Online Magazine podcast series, where we feature interviews with top authors and experts. My name is Stacey Amaral Kaufman. I'm the radio director of Jennings PR, the national PR firm behind the online feature magazine sensation, JenningsWire.com, a community of bloggers that share their personal experiences and wisdom gained throughout their lives. There's nothing like it on the web, and we invite you to visit JenningsWire.com to discover the blogger that is just right for you. And today's guest is actor and screenwriter Michael Genet, author of They Must Not Know Who I Think I Am, Lessons in Defiant Resilience. And today we'll be discussing how defiant resilience is the difference between letting rejection defeat you and rising above it to soar to great heights. So welcome, Michael.
Hello, Stacey. How are you?
I'm doing well. And yourself?
I am well. I'm busy, staying dry on this wet weather day, but I'm really well and excited about everything that's going on. Thanks for having me.
Oh, well, good. Well, it's our pleasure. And, you know, one of the questions we wanted to ask, what exactly is defiant resilience?
Well, defiant resilience is that power that a lot of us don't even know we have. It lies deep inside of us. It allows us to get knocked down 1,000 times, but find a way to get back up 1,001. It allows us to hear a no, hear a dozen no's a day, but find a way to put a force field around ourselves, if you will, so that that no or those no's don't mean nothing. Because a no, if you stop and really think about it, there hasn't been a no that anyone has ever gotten in their lifetime, for the most part, that has ever killed anybody. So a no, in my humble personal opinion, means absolutely nothing unless we ourselves allow it to be. I mean, you can tell. I mean, who is it? Eleanor Roosevelt once said, I think, never let someone tell you no who doesn't have the power to tell you yes. You know what I mean?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right. So a no means nothing unless you allow it to be. So defiant resilience is that thing that lies inside, and it's in all of us. It allows us to get knocked down, but get back up, to hear a no, but find a way to make them say yes eventually.
Now, Michael, how can people maybe that don't find that can't feel that take the no for the answer and just say, oh, all right, you know, whatever, fine, you know, I'll go do something else then. How do you tell people how they can harness the power of that defiant resilience? What would be the first step that you would tell them to do?
Well, I tell them, look, take stock of your own life, of who you are, and because the reality is that we all have that thing inside of us that has the potential to make us champions in some arena, some area of this world or other. I mean, the truth is that too many times we fool ourselves as to who we are or what we want to be. It's no sense in me telling you that I want to play in the NBA so I could, you know, dunk over Magic Johnson or Michael Jordan. I don't have those skills. My skills in basketball were above average street game. But to play at that level, no. But I have a talent that lends itself to the sciences, or maybe I have a talent that lends itself to the classroom. So to hear a no in one facet of our life does not mean that we should just cower in a corner and say, well, that's it. We just got to exhale, take another deep breath, take a day or two off, have a pity party if you want. I'm all for 24, 48-hour pity parties, but after that, you got to get back up, find that little bit of courage inside of yourself, put your pedal to the metal, and say, okay, he said no, she said no, but I'm going to keep knocking at the door until someone says yes. Because if you knock at the door long enough, eventually somebody inside is going to open it, if for only the reason so that they can stop hearing that incessant knocking. And when they knock, right, when they open that door, then all you got to do is step into the room and start working it, you know?
Now, what do you mean when you ask people, are you strong enough to run your own race? What is running your own race?
Oh, that's great. That's a great one. Well, you know, how many of us get so, I mean, you know that old saying, I don't know if it's even prevalent in today's society, but when I was growing up, there used to be that saying, trying to keep up with the Joneses. Everyone's trying to keep up with the Joneses. The Joneses got a new Cadillac. I got to get a new Cadillac. Or they got a new house. I got to get a new house, blah, blah, blah. we all sometimes in our life, we get wrapped up into what the person in the next lane is doing, as opposed to mm-hmm. running our own race. I had this dear friend of mine who is, and I won't call out her name because she's a pretty prevalent TV star at the moment. But we were doing a show together a few years ago, and her boyfriend at the time was an up-and-comer. He's now one of the biggest A-list stars in the game. And they were really, really close. And he came and hung out with us. And she and I, we would always go home together after the show because they had our hotels were right a block away from each other. And she would cry every night after the show on the way home because her boyfriend was being seen and getting cast in every movie with every major director you can think of in the game. And she was like, why is his career, you know, going gangbusters and mine not? And I had to finally just stop and tell her one day, baby, you are going to have an absolute nervous breakdown. You can't run his life, his race. You mm-hmm. He's running his own and he's being successful. You got to run your own race. And she stopped and said, are you serious? I said, yeah, you got to run your own race. And then shortly after, when I say shortly, a few months after that, things started happening for her. She, for whatever reason, took my advice, and her career started taking off. She got two TV series, a few movies. I mean, she realized that she was trying to compare her career to his, and when she stopped doing that and ran her own race, all the magic that was laid out in her path and her destiny for her was able to present itself. So that's what I mean by that. Are you strong enough to do that? Because you have to be strong enough to run your own race, because you're the only one who can finish your own race. And whether you finish your race dead last in comparison to people in the other lanes next to you doesn't matter. If you finish your race, then you automatically are a winner.
Well, that is excellent. You know, don't compare yourself to other people. I think that's excellent advice, Michael. Now, what about, you know, just staying the course? Right. You know, just being patient, continuing to run your own race, yet you're not really experiencing that success yet. Like you were saying, like your friend, how can people find the patience within themselves to wait for their own victories to come?
Well, that's a great question. And patience is absolutely essential. We are a 5 minute attention span society, and everyone we go to a fast food restaurant, we order a hamburger or whatever, and we expect it to come over the counter for us in 2 minutes. You know, we want instant gratification for everything. But if you stop and think about it, the things that really mean the most to us, we should be able to say, okay, if it doesn't happen today, if it doesn't happen tomorrow, I'm willing to pay the price to wait for this thing because I truly believe in it. Now, case in point, the first script I ever wrote as a writer got selected to Sundance. It won all these awards. And by most accounts of everyone in Hollywood who's ever read this thing, and it's a jazz piece, okay? They have, most people in Hollywood who read it have called it, and I'm not just telling you this, this is the absolute truth, they've called it the greatest script they've ever read. But it has yet to be produced. It's 21 years in the making, and it is yet to be produced. And people say to me, are you panicked? Aren't you upset? And I tell them, no. I've been panicked about a lot of things in my career, but I've never been panicked about, and the script is called Pork Pie. And it's been produced on stage, major stage production, nightly standing ovations. Like I said, selected to Sundance. It's won major awards, Kennedy Center Award and everything. But it hasn't been produced as a film yet because Hollywood doesn't have a paradigm to say a jazz piece will make $100 million at the box office. My Hollywood makes what they know is going to be successful, and they don't have a paradigm for this one. So, but I've never lost faith that this thing is going to happen. Okay, my victory for Pork Pie will come. And here's the other thing. I was doing Elton John and Anne Rice's Broadway musical, Lestat, about the vampires a few years ago on Broadway. And, you know, gorgeous show, beautiful show, but we didn't have the good fortune to run for a long time. The show closed in 4 months. But opening night, and we did all this work. We were out of town in San Francisco, and we, you know, everything, work, broke our backs trying to make this thing a success. Opening night, I'm standing in the wings because I played Marius, the ancient vampire, takes Lestat up to vampire heaven. I'm standing in the wings going on for the finale with me and Lestat. I'm going to take him to heaven. And I look, and there's a guy over by the stairwell backstage in the shadows. And I just see this silhouette of this guy, and I'm thinking, who is that? He doesn't belong back here. And then I stop, and he stops, and he looks over at me, and I can't make out his face at all. But then I realize, oh, my God, that's Sir Elton John. And he walks over, and he embraces me in the biggest hug, and I kissed him on the cheek, and I said, "Welcome to Broadway, Sir Elton." And I realized in that moment, here I am standing with one of the greatest icons of all of our generation ever.
Right.
And we're standing there as equals, as artists, and he's congratulating me for being a part of his production. And that was my victory for this show.
Wow.
My victory wasn't a Tony Award or the show running for 5, 10 years. My victory was this private, and nobody else knew this. My friends weren't there to see it. I can't like put it on YouTube and say, here, Instagram, me and Elton. But that moment happened. It was a private moment, but that was my victory for all the work that we had put into that show. The victories will come. All of us, we get our victories. They don't come always in a flash. Sometimes they take a little longer, you know, and you have to find a way to be resilient enough, be defiant enough to wait for them. You know, everything is not a 5-minute hamburger. You know what I mean?
Right. Absolutely. Well, Michael, you've given us some really wonderful pieces of advice and inspiration, very inspirational for our listeners out there. And if you want to learn more about Michael Genet and his book, They Must Not Know Who I Think I Am, which, by the way, is a brilliant title. They Must Not Know Who I Think I Am. You can do so at michaelgenet.com. And that's Michael, GENET.com. So thank you for being here, Michael.
Stacey, you've been a joy. You've been a pleasure. It's been a really, really nice experience being with you. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. This podcast is presented by Annie Jennings of the national publicity firm, Annie Jennings PR, the creator of Jennings Wire Online Magazine, a diverse community of talented, insightful, and relevant bloggers that share helpful and perhaps life-changing posts and podcasts just like this one. So please enjoy more on JenningsWire.com and discover bloggers who might be perfect for you. Till next time.